Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am Gaius. Germanicus is here. We are first century AD men reading the New Yorker in the 21st century. And we are self-confessed astonished at what we're reading. The title, Marty Baron on the Washington Post spineless, in quotes, endorsement decision, subhead. The former executive editor, Marty Baron, discusses his relationship with the newspaper's owner, Jeff Bezos, the second most successful man in the solar system, who was reportedly behind the last-minute call to kill an editorial supporting Kamala Harris. This is an interview by Isaac Chotiner at The New Yorker. Germanicus, I did not expect this, nor did I expect the Washington Post not to endorse Kamala Harris. And now the New Yorker's interview suggests that Bezos is a villain. Bezos, to my memory, paid an enormous sum of money to own the Washington Post personally. This is not an Amazon acquisition. I believe right. It's Mr. Bezos's from his billions and billions and billions. However, this article goes on at great length talking to Marty Baron, who is revered, that he had no prior knowledge of Bezos reversing course. And then they questioned the present publisher, Will Lewis, who is the man who signed the editorial saying there would not be an endorsement. The puzzle here is, it is November 6th, the day after the election. We are presuming, because we can only see so far, we are presuming that this editorial decision at the Washington Post and this unhappy interview in the New Yorker are anticipating a success for the former president and a defeat for the vice president. We're presuming that. There is a suggestion here of something alarmingly wrong and that we're headed to a catastrophe. So the puzzle here is, it's the day after, and this looks that the optimates are turning on themselves, something that's happened very often in the Roman Senate. We've seen it many times. Sometimes we call it a civil war. Sometimes we call it a purge. Sometimes men ask for exile rather than execution. Sometimes they open their own veins. There are various forms of it. How do you measure this? When you first heard, was the Senate turning on itself? Do they all have their daggers out? Or were they anticipating there's advantage here? Good evening to you, Germanicus.
Good evening, Gaius. Among the many invidious historical comparisons between Trump and various malign figures, shall we say, in the past, is the comparison of Mr. Trump to Gaius Julius Caesar. And as we all know, the optimates were dead set against Caesar because he, in effect, was the leader of the populares, and he had promised to essentially save them from the kind of state into which they had fallen, which in large part was the responsibility of the optimates and the endless wars that they pursued, which had brought the populares into a state of abnegation and poverty. So the optimates did what? They assassinated Caesar. And the ability of today's optimates to assassinate the latter-day Caesar has failed again and again. And the lawfare, who knows? The encouragement of potential assassins, who knows? All of that has failed, and Mr. Trump is going from strength to strength. And the problem now for the senatorial class in the U.S., you know, the heads of all of the commanding heights.
On November 6th, that's, go ahead.
Yes, but they're faced already with the defection of some of their number, the billionaires like Mr. Musk and David Sachs and others. And in effect, what we're seeing is in many ways very resonant to what happened in the period of the end of the Roman Republic. And they are now in a desperate state. And the only way in their minds that they could ensure that they maintain control and authority is to have a united front, A, and B, to marshal the instruments, the mechanisms of direct control of the American people, whether it's Department of Homeland Security, FBI, whether it's some new information bureau that will, quote unquote, work with social media to make sure that American views are properly massaged and controlled, in other words, censored. All of that is coming apart. And as a result, the disarray itself is evidence of a pessimism. Who knows if that will be maintained, but the united front that the optimates relied upon in order to stay in control and in power is obviously not just brittle and cracking, it's fissuring, it's coming apart.
Yes, it does not appear that there's a plan. It appears that it's every man and woman for him or herself. Hence the,
right.
Hence the speculation about resignations. There have already been resignations at the Washington Post. There were resignations at the LA Times when that very well-to-do owner decided not to endorse Harris or anyone. It's
right.
Not like Trump is getting endorsements. It's that Harris is not endorsed by editorial pages that have been supporting whoever the Democrats bring forward for some time. So it appears that there's a panic, and then beyond panic, there's adjustment. Bezos, being a shrewd manager of public
of
opinion,
his own, yes.
public opinion, has gotten out front. Musk got out front of Bezos, and now Bezos has got out front of, you know, pick your billionaire. There are lots of them. Now,
well, I mean, yeah.
A puzzle, because we also pay attention to media. There are a series of late-night comics, so-called. I don't know all their names all the time, because I don't. It's, you know, I've aged out of that. But in any event, they've prospered these many years with Trump. It would appear that there's an analogy there to what's going on with the billionaires. They're going to want to realign themselves. I don't know they can. So it might be that we're beginning a reorganization in media and in what media admires and talks about. It might be. They could also run a Russiagate, too. It's possible.
They could try. But what we're seeing, and that you've so eloquently described, is that a ruling establishment, the commanding heights that have been in power for decades, really, when they are faced with this sort of challenge, they begin to come apart. And the problem, essentially, with the ruling establishment, the ruling class, is that they are effectively, as was Rome at the end of the Republic, the optimates can only marshal themselves as an oligarchy. And oligarchies have a tremendous vulnerability in the sense that they don't have a true leader. They do sometimes, but rarely. And so an oligarchy under stress, and especially under attack from a very powerful popular leader, is going to be weak, and it's going to come apart. And that is exactly what is happening.
Yes, we'll watch this because it's speculation. November 6th, speculation.
Right.
It could all be a fairy tale that didn't come true or didn't happen. We'll watch it. But right now, the surprise to me, watching this from the first century AD here in Londinium, where the Thames is turbulent and it's turned very cool and everybody's gone home early, and we're going to watch a one-act play later that has to do with the year four emperors. We always pay attention to that because right now we're living with four or five emperors. We're not sure how many. We're going to turn to a topic that's of great import for the new administration in 2025. That's Ukraine. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm Gaius. Germanicus is here. And I'm John Batchelor. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am Gaius. Germanicus is here. We are in Londinium, enjoying our cup of wine by the Thames. The marketplace behind us is largely empty. It's nighttime now. It's cooler. People have gone home. Greeks work for us. We don't work, so we don't have to retire early. And we're going to the theater later. There's said to be a one-act play about something that happened during the year of four emperors. We're always interested. You remember Galba, Otho, Vitellius, and Vespasian giving us this golden emperor we have now, Domitian, the son of Vespasian. We all live with these doubts. However, we're far away from Rome, so we have lots of anxiety that we don't need to waste on our present circumstances that we can direct towards the 21st century. And one of the revelations these last years is that the American people remain as they were in the 19th century, as they were in the 18th century. They don't want to get involved in European affairs, to put it bluntly. Europe was then. This is now. My roots are European. Germanicus' roots are European. Much of American history, the roots are European. And there was a reason our forebears traveled to the New World. And it remains, it's built into us. It might be a DNA. I don't know. They'll find it. You know, beware Europe somewhere in the chromosomes. But in any event, what we have now is entanglement with European affairs. That's the polite way of putting it. And I've been reading 1939 to 1941, and the contest between the so-called America Firsters, no entanglements, Europe is there, we're secure here in North America, and Franklin Roosevelt's administration and his entanglement with Winston Churchill, and that Europe's fate is America's fate, was FDR's opinion and Churchill's opinion. The chief spokesman for the America Firsters came to be the boyhood hero, Charles Lindbergh, who'd gone through tragedy, who'd been in Europe from 35 to 38 to escape the newspapers hounding him and his wife and his two sons, and had returned in alarm at what he saw happening in Europe as the continent tipped towards what we now know to be global war. He came home to join this group, and he became its favorite speaker, saying no entanglements. It's not a complicated message. In the first war, we were told by Woodrow Wilson, a predecessor of FDR, that this was a war that would secure democracy, secure it for a generation, the last war, the war to end wars. And Lindbergh didn't have to fill in what comes next. Europe lied because Europe went back to empire and to backstabbing and to deceit. And so he was saying the same thing in 38, 39. And Roosevelt listened to him. So when Roosevelt campaigned for his third term, he would say various paraphrases, "I promise you, your boys will not die in a foreign war." He said it again and again. And Churchill said, "I don't believe him, but I've got to stay with it. I've got to stay, continue the romance." And he did with FDR. Lindbergh said, I don't believe him, and I've got to stop him because he's going to take us into that war. He's going to do it incrementally. Well, that's what happened. Here we are in 2024. I've taken up too much of the prelude, Germanicus, forgive me, but it is striking. Again, history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes, and in this case, it rhymes as a tragedy. We look to be entangled, Germanicus, and the new president, whoever it is, but we're presuming it won't be a continuation of the Biden policy, will have to deal with entanglement. Can we get out without damaging our own country?
America's entanglement after World War I created a tremendous emotional whipsaw among Americans because the stern Calvinist Messiah, Mr. Wilson, had created this intense apocalyptic and messianic mission for the U.S. that was not ultimately fulfilled. And Americans were willing to go along with that, especially after it had been detuned by the post-war Republican administrations into something more reasonable, the Washington Naval Treaties. But the fact is that in World War I, in just the space of about 8 months, America lost 100,000 men in combat, 10,000 plus men a month. And it was something that did not sit well with Americans when the fabric of Wilsonian security post-war, including the naval treaties, the Kellogg-Briand Pact, the League of Nations, all of that fell apart with the Great Depression. And Americans wanted nothing to do with what was happening in Europe. And also, Americans knew generally how powerful they were, because at this point, America was more than 30% of world manufacturing. America had a financial lock on the rest of the world. The debts that Russia, Germany, Britain, France, and Italy had to pay to the U.S. meant the U.S. had tremendous leverage. And yet there was no reason with that kind of power and the ability to mobilize, which it had demonstrated beyond all doubt in the period of 1917, 1918, meant that the U.S. was essentially the superpower all through the interwar period. And Americans understood that they really were untouchable, and they really didn't need to engage in European squabbles, which, frankly, would be self-immolating in the sense that, say you had Britain, France, and Germany fighting, or say you had Germany and Russia, the new Soviet Union fighting, they would all essentially immobilize themselves in conflict. Why should the U.S. get involved? And everything in the American character that Lindbergh expressed was an encapsulation of our origin, which was the farewell address of George Washington. And if America is to be an example to the world and a model and something that the rest of the world can aspire to, it cannot degrade itself by getting corrupted through its engagement with other corrupted powers, taking sides, essentially acting arbitrarily. This is, I think, one of the reasons that Americans today, and I think at this point, the majority of Americans are very wary, if not wholly opposed to our proxy war engagement in Ukraine.
Can we get out, Germanicus? Can we get out?
Yes. Yes, we can. However, it will require a new leader. And the new leader wants to get out, and that means that there is real possibility. If the course remains unchanged and it's a blue administration come November, then we won't get out and things will eventually escalate. In other words, the entire movement that the decadent imperial city and its establishment are trumpeting as a potential world war is not the path we want to go down any more than the path that Roosevelt set us on at the end of the 1930s. There is no reason for the U.S. to engage in not just foreign wars, but what potentially with China and Russia would be another world war. This is absurd. There is nothing that requires the United States to essentially insert itself in others' affairs.
I believe you, but can we get out? Can we do it? The state security has talent. State security has run Ukraine for how many years? Since at least 14.
Yes. Yes. The only way that we can effectively get out of Ukraine and potentially out of the Middle East would be to have a new administration. I say that without reference to the nature of that administration. It just so happens that you need a new leader who says we must get out. Then that is all things are possible.
Do you think Trump has the talent to do that? Because he'll be lame. This is a one-term president.
Well, that's what gives him his strength, that he is lame. That means he doesn't have to, he's not beholden to the lobby when it comes to the Middle East, and he's not beholden to all of the vested interests in the military-industrial complex, both with the Middle East and with Ukraine. He can basically say, okay, I'm going to do this. And, you know, the majority of Americans really would like that to happen. You know, even though we're not losing people like we did in Iraq and Afghanistan, we are essentially engaged in a gigantic game of chicken with Russia and China, potentially Iran, obviously. But this is no place the U.S. should be. And most Americans don't want that. They want a focus on the renewal, the restoration, if you will, of American life.
You're being surprisingly rosy scenario today, Germanicus. I'm pleased. I'm smiling. Usually, I, Gaius, the narrator, have to take up this role.
In the darkest of times, there is always, as the Greeks would say, the rosy-fingered dawn.
Well, what happened in 1941, we don't want that to repeat, Germanicus. We don't. Because the solution to Roosevelt's tangle with Lindbergh was Pearl Harbor. That's not for us.
Roosevelt conspired for years to get us involved both in Europe and in Asia.
And was still surprised, very surprised. They expected the attack in Manila.
And if you have a leader who is the opposite, who doesn't want that, then the likelihood is that solutions can be found.
Germanicus Magableos, Gaius John Batcher, in Londinium, a small codicil, the year of four emperors. We're going to look at it again because it might be that we missed one. There might be five of them. This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. This is the Friends of History Debating Society in Londinium. I am Gaius. Germanicus is here. The year of four emperors, I remind you all, it happened once in the first century AD. We were taught it as school children. Nero died. There are different versions. But the emperor, the last of the Julian Claudian, dead. And now the generals, who are really senators, distributed around the empire, all thought it could be me. The first one to think it could be me was a man named Galba, who came from a noble family and was cruel and admired by some elements of the army. He did not last long. Next up was a man named Otho. He also had claims, although he might have been freedman born, not nobility, but he had claims on the empire. He gave up as soon as he was marched against by Vitellius, agents of Vitellius from the Rhineland. And finally, after burning Rome and slaughtering all kinds of people at all sides, everybody for everybody, all against all, Vespasian marches in and becomes the emperor. That's the year four emperors that we know in the first century AD. Germanicus and I have been entertaining that we have five emperors. This is the year of five emperors. The two emperors running for the Democrats, the two emperors running for the Republicans, and a fifth emperor, which we were presuming was Joe Biden. But over these last days, there's some suggestion that Joe Biden was, I want to be polite here, representing Barack Obama's interests. Is that acceptable to explain it that way, Germanicus?
It is not only acceptable, it is coin of the realm. It is the currency of all of the conversation in Washington, maybe not in the U.S. as a whole, but within the imperial city, it is acknowledged as ground truth. So effectively, Mr. Obama, co-opting the lineaments of the Clinton era and appropriating and accommodating them, has essentially been in charge since 2009 and operating in a way that no one could call out, but effectively marshaling all of the forces within the oligarchy. In effect, he's been, if you will, if you look at a medieval republic to early modern republic, which would be Venice, which was an oligarchy, they would have a doge. And some doges could be extremely powerful. And the idea of operating behind the scenes has been his métier. And what kind of, you know, you talk about pulling the curtain, you know, the
yes,
revelation.
He's out now.
That happened.
The man behind the curtain is standing on the podium.
Right. And that happened just a week ago.
Right.
It became clear. And again, today with his wife, Michelle, it is quite clear that he is the man behind the curtain. And this is the dynasty of sorts that is now in near hysteria, you know, because its time is nigh. It has maintained its power in spite of the absence of the charismatic man who had created that power. And it shows the limits, the constraints of operating behind the scenes in a constitutional order in which it is necessary to have a president who is not a puppet. And having two puppets in a row has essentially undermined the claim of that party of blue to the loyalty and confidence of the American people. And that is the problem with oligarchy.
Does it suit the fifth emperor that the turmoil continues?
The turmoil might in a situation of desperation be used as a pretext for extraordinary measures. However, if voted out of office, it would be extremely difficult.
There is a story that follows that, Germanicus. I'm not going to tell it, but I've been told a story that follows that turmoil between November 5th and January 20th.
Yes, the possibility of a terrible story is with us.
Right. We're going to set it aside. It's not probable, but it's possible.
No, it's not probable. And my sense is, depending on the nature of the outcome, it would be put aside.
Right.
But under certain circumstances, a very close election, tremendous unrest, it could be activated.
Does it suit the Fifth Emperor to come out and talk, or was that a mistake?
It was clearly a mistake. Having his wife come out and make the same kind of scolding, remonstrative comments was a mistake. And I think in many ways, the best outcome would be for Mr. Obama to look to the great words of Harry Callahan, in a.k.a. Clint Eastwood, in the movie where he says, a man's got to know his limitations.
Yeah. Germanicus is Michael Vlahos. I am Gaius, John Batchelor. We're in Londinium. This is the best part of the week. We now go to sacrifice to the god Augustus, who started this empire that we're enjoying. Now we're going on to the theater. We're told there's a poet recovered one-act play from the time of Galba. He was the first of the four emperors. And it was when Rome had a momentary feeling that the oppressor was dead, that Nero, the whims of Nero were not coming again, and that he really was not going to haunt us. We're going to go in a new day. The Julian-Claudian family is dead. We've got to make a good choice. There was that moment, and that's what the play's about tonight, the possibilities. Today, Germanicus enjoys that, and I'm going to try to catch up with him. We have one more conversation before November 6th, the day after, happens. I'm John Batchelor.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Chances are, you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info, and if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange anytime. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.